Today we have Arash, founder of Tauchi, one of the subnets built on BitTensor, subnet 8, to be specific, I believe. Arash, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I think BitTensor has been a little bit difficult for some people to understand. And I found it really helpful to specifically dive into subnets as a way to help people understand BitTensor. I think sim in a similar way that it's hard to understand Ethereum and DeFi before Uniswap and Compound came out, right? So I think this conversation will be really helpful in kind of enlightening people on what BitTensor is really capable of. So I think just to start, could you give a little bit of context on what Tauchi is and why it's important?
Yeah, so we immediately when we found out about BitTensor, we just saw massive potential. Like first day, I got in and I went to the general channel and I just started reading and reading and reading because that's where all the resources are. And I got in contact with Const and was like, "We want to build a subnet." We were immediately because the potential was for what could be built is so high and so big, right? I do think it's one of the biggest innovations in crypto in the last probably 7 years. So, for us, we at Tauchi, we want to deliver unique subnets that have true value. And when we talk about value, we're talking about a approach that eventually leads to revenue streams. And it's something that we're very obsessed with is if you ever see me posting on social is driving revenue. That's our target. So we are our subnets and everything we build is with the intention of delivering revenue to the network. And so that is really what we're targeting with all the subnets we are planning on launching.
Gotcha. And right now, Tauchi is a price prediction subnet, right? And so, can you dive into exactly like what that means? How does Tauchi actually work at the subnet level?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, so we have one subnet live right now, which is our price forecasting subnet, and it's for financial markets. We could have gone in many different ways here, but really our domain expertise has been in financial markets. We have trading strategies that are already live that do extremely well. So we were like, well, let's just stick in our world. This is what we know to deliver or how to deliver. And I'll explain what SN8 is and what Subnet is and what this price forecasting subnet does and why it's unique is if you think about like a single entity trying to build a trading strategy, you can take years to come up with a trading strategy that functions well, but it still won't be the best trading strategy to exist, right? You're not going to be able to handle all the cases, market starting to trend versus range. Market starting to go bullish or bearish, right? All these scenarios across all these trade pairs, because again, there's multiple financial markets that you can trade. There's crypto, there's Forex, there's stocks, metals. So there's so much to take on when you build a trading strategy. And so what we realized was if we can build a decentralized subnet that can handle all of that via all these miners competing to build models, machine learning models for various trade pairs across various markets and various market conditions, because they're constantly competing, then we can kind of have the most complete trading strategy to ever exist. Now that's what the end result could be. So what miners do right now, how the network works right now is miners try to predict price movement. They try to predict 8 hours into the future. And currently we're just concentrating miners' attention on Bitcoin. Eventually, that's going to expand. But currently, we're concentrating all their efforts on Bitcoin. And what they're trying to do is just predict next 8 hour interval of time every 30 minutes. So every 30 minutes, they get a new request or try to predict 8 hours into the future. And essentially, the miners that can predict most close to what actually happens are the ones that are rewarded the most. And so that's the beauty of BitTensor is the incentive portion of it, which is getting miners to try to perform an action as close to whatever the subnet owner is defining, right? For us, the definition of what success is a miner trying to predict closest to what happens in reality, like actual after the closes actually occur. So that's how miners compete. They compete to predict Bitcoin's price right now. And we build at Taushi, we build a ton of tools and systems to help enable miners to be more successful. That is our goal. So our approach is, hey, we built this subnet. Great. We could just sit back and say, let's just kick up our feet and say, oh, miners, just go at it, you know, try to figure it out. But that process would take much longer for miners to be able to predict better, right? So the output would take longer to get to, the desired outcome would take longer to get to. And I also would disincentivize some miners from joining because the amount of work to get up and running is larger because you have to think about data sources that you're ingesting. You got to think about feature engineering. You got to think about pipelines. You got to think about scale. And then you got to think about the modeling. So we've really taken a hands-on approach to our miners to make them successful. We've taken on a hands-on approach to make our validators successful. And overall, just the subnet, getting that output out there eventually in the next couple of quarters that's sellable. So validators can receive revenue streams. So we do things. I would say we're more of a leader in what we're trying to do just in the world of BitTensor and creating subnets and creating this template for success that other subnets can also capture and perform as well.
Just for the sake of people who might not be as familiar with the different lexicon, I think of the subnet, who are the main stakeholders? You've discussed miners, you've discussed validators, and then I think you guys as registrars and owners of the subnet. You know, what sort of incentivizes them to come to SN8 and you know, hang around?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So SN8 is, the incentive is from Tau, the cryptocurrency, and miners and validators receive Tau for participating in the network. So in order to determine or pay out the top miners, they receive Tau via competition. So essentially they're all competing to receive Tau, which has a value. And the top miners, the top performers receive more Tau. The worst performing you do, the less Tau you receive until the last performing miner is actually eliminated from the network. And so it has this natural process of as a marketplace to remove the weaker competition and keep the stronger, right? So that's kind of the ethos a bit of BitTensor. It's the same thing for validators. Larger validator has higher incentive, stays in consensus longer. Has higher incentive, right? Or is paid out more, right? This idea of incentive. So so validators are in a marketplace of competition, miners are in a marketplace of competition. So for SN8, for example, miners are the ones providing machine learning models to try and predict the price of Bitcoin right now. And validators are the ones receiving those, requesting those predictions, receiving them back, and then grading the performance. And then there's a consensus model, Yuma consensus, which essentially all the validators try to reach their own consensus. And then the consensus is reached across the network based off of what each of them is saying is the right answer. So every validator is trying to stay in consensus with each other. So there's an incentive there to do that. And so those are the main participants. And then as subnet owners, we also exist and receive network emissions for building, creating a successful subnet that hopefully eventually has real value either via growth metrics, users, adoption, or revenue modeling, which is the other main option, in my opinion, as a main resource subnet. So yeah, that's the kind of the general lay of the land in terms of how the various participants function.
Yeah, can you dive in to benchmarking a little bit and ranking miners? Because, you know, ranking and benchmarking on SN8 might be very different to another subnet where the objective function is very, very different, right? It strikes me that like on SN8, it's way more objective, right? Because like, was your prediction really close to the outcome on Bitcoin's price versus another subnet, which is like, was this response to an LLM query, you know, better than this other response? And that's very fuzzy. So can you like Absolutely. Just dive into kind of how that benchmarking works, maybe like for SN8 and then maybe across subnets if you have context there?
Yeah. So what got us really interested was once we learned about how BitTensor works and how the incentive mechanism works, we realized pretty quickly that doing things like time series is going to be pretty straightforward because the validation process is true. There's an object. There's an object. Objective answer to what the question is. But that doesn't exist because we can check their predictions against what happened live, right? 8 hours into the future. But when it comes to other subnets, it's not so simple. So say, there's an LLM model and it's saying, give me the resolution to peace in the Middle East. Well, what is the right answer there? I mean, yeah. How do you even judge that, right? And so we knew that the other subnets are going to have various challenges when it comes to machine learning responses to things that are not so objective and clear. There's a ton of problems that subnet owners have to think about when they're juggling these other subnets that are not time series based. You have to think about making sure that your validators, if they're running an ML model themselves to compare the results against, that it's not overfit to any of the responses, right? It's a fair and objective validation mechanism. You have to make sure that it doesn't concentrate on one piece more than another when I'm saying overfit. So essentially what can happen is, say your validation model is concentrated on one thing is the right answer versus another thing, saying like, oh, this is what I think the resolution to peace in the Middle East is. And what happens is the miners can just kind of concentrate closer to what the validator's output is expecting. And so it strays away from an objective answer. And so this rebalancing and this constant changing nature that is required of the validation mechanisms is what makes it so challenging to create successful subnets when it comes to machine learning. But it's also the biggest potential, in my opinion. If you can create a proper validation mechanism that is kind of forever changing in terms of what the expected outcome is, or is able to kind of juggle an objective answer, what's objectively the best answer, you're going to create a highly successful subnet that is going to be very hard to touch. So like the possibility here is like a massive potential return for creating something that's incredibly hard to create. And so I think part of actually that what that ends up with is there's going to be quite a bit of, just to be honest, I think there's going to be quite a bit of subnets that have a hard time with the validation mechanism, just based on what I just said. And so it's going to take a team of ML engineers and scientists to really make successful subnets in some of these categories, in my opinion, which is something that we're actually really interested in as well. We just figured we'd start with objective function that's simpler and then migrate.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think validates kind of my intuition, right? It's not so simple to create a subnet because the validation mechanism has to be sort of custom for each subnet, right? And so as a subnet owner, are you developing the validation mechanism and sharing it with validators? And then they are all kind of looking at that mechanism and saying, okay, yeah, this works. We will all run this. Is that sort of how it works?
Yeah, that is how it works. So the subnet owners decide what is the objective of the miners, and all the validators run that. And so the validation process is defined by the subnet owner, and all of the validators run that that source code. And they're not supposed to touch it, because if you touch it, you're likely to fall out of consensus. So the difficulty is on the subnet owner to figure that out. And we, even on SN8, even though the objective seems clear, it's actually quite hard to make sure you're constantly adjusting, you're trying to make it so you're properly incentivizing. It is actually quite hard, even from something like time series, because you want to make sure that you're incentivizing properly. So we're constantly changing even our validation process to make sure that we're providing the right model for all of our miners. So you can imagine for other subnets are machine learning based, that are also machine learning based, but like tackling in different ways, they're not time series. They have to constantly be adjusting. It's a constant adjustment period for them. And as subnet owners, we actually have many responsibilities. In my opinion, running a subnet is more like running a startup than it is being a dev. And I talk about that quite a bit, because you need to think about what helps miners be successful. Now, miners are kind of a black box for us. Like, we don't really know what they're running and how they're trying to find vectors for gaming the system. But we do need to support them for success, for the ones that are trying to do it right. So There's the supporting of the miners themselves, making sure that they're as successful as possible. They have an easy time onboarding. You know, they can build some more complex models. You know, at Taoshi, we do this in a few ways. We build all these products, like the feature engineering pipelines that are highly scalable. We vet data sources for them as inputs. So we vet the best data sources in the world for them to use that they can just plug and play via the feature engineering pipeline we build. And then we build open source models for them from two points. It's one, to increase competition on the network, and also two, to think more creatively about solutions. So we do all of that just for our miners. And then you think about validators, you have to support them, make sure they're running, make sure that they have the tools in case something goes wrong, their server goes down or whatever may be the case, so that they're supported so they can get back up and running as quickly as possible. And they're supported with, you know, you have 24/7 support practically. And then you have to think about how you're going to output this information to actually make it sellable. What is your metrics you're looking to use? How are you going to maintain positioning in the network in terms of importance, right? Because it's all a marketplace. How are you going to drive apps to use your subnet? What is your value proposition? Yeah, and the whole marketing side, right? So all of this is on the subnet owner to figure out. So it's really a startup. I don't really see it, you know, as a single core dev or even a team of ML engineers. You have to think more on the business side too, and support side, and, you know, marketing side. So yeah, there's a lot that goes into it as a subnet owner.
I'm curious if you guys, I mean, I know it's very early on, because you started the subnet, what, middle of last year? But have you guys been out there in the market trying to see if there's demand from somebody to already start engaging with you guys on using some feeds? Or, I mean, obviously, you know, we run a hedge fund, so let us know when you guys are ready. But
yeah, so it's super fascinating. So we launched November 6th. So it's only been 3 months, 4 months. I mean, it's baby step right now, right? Infancy. But the reality, like, the predictions are actually getting quite good, and we are going to be aggressively looking to bring on talent. We've built all this infrastructure for miners to make them successful so they can just concentrate on modeling on purpose, so that we can just streamline adding in competition. So we're going to be aggressively marketing on LinkedIn. You know, we're going to create topics, conversation on Hugging Face with our open source models. We're going to be on Reddit. We're going to be running ads, aggressive ad campaigns. I mean, we're going to be all over the place. We've defined a very aggressive marketing strategy because we've already built the infrastructure for success for miners. So for us, it starts with the engine, right? If we can get the engine to be where we expect it to be, then getting the interested parties is going to be so easy when you have such a good product. So already, though, we updated our Taoshi website, I think late last week. I think it was actually Friday. Immediately upon launch, we have a form that says, hey, if you're interested in the output, just fill out this form. We'll get in contact with you. First day, 40 signups. So, and that's not even like the contacts that I've been talking to. We've been talking to quant firms and hedge funds and traders that want the output to use it as part of their trading strategy. So really, when we think about SN8 is not really, its intention isn't really to be a single trading strategy. That's really not its goal. The goal is to actually use SN8 as part of your trading strategy. So if you think about it, like for Tarvis Labs, like our background is creating trading strategies, right? And using these trading strategies. So what we would do is we would take that output of SN8 as an input to our models. Mm-hmm. So it would just be another feature it would be a set of features that we could add. So we could use them to better improve our own models to do better in the market. And so that's what a lot of traders are looking to do. They have, say, quant strategies, very algorithmic. They don't have the ML side. And so they can use SN8 as a component to their existing strategies, combine it, and now they have an even better output, say, on choosing targets to exit, right? Say maybe they have a really good entry strategy, but they don't really have a good exit strategy. And so SN8 can help them determine when to better exit the market. So these things, it's just a component that can be added in to existing strategies to make it even better.
Yeah, it's super interesting, and it just raises a ton of questions for me off the bat. So right now, it's SN8 is focused on Bitcoin price predictions 8 hours in the future, right? So it's very very focused. With all of these potential pathways, you know, for new trading strategies. How do those get created? Is it a request from like one of these hedge funds? Will they just say, you know, this is what I'm trying to predict specifically? Will it be input like a, you know, ChatGPT type query? How exactly does that do those new like kind of strategies and functions get created within SN8?
Yeah, so we actually work a little different than other subnets. It takes time for our miners to derive their predictions, right? Like they need it. There's a lot of work that goes behind the hood, ensemble models working HTF, MTF, LTF. You know, they have to put all this together to create their final predictions. And so because it's so compute oriented, it takes a while to do. Instead, what we do is we just say, hey, give us predictions, expect us to request predictions on these intervals. So like a hedge fund that's or a quant firm that's expecting a result, it would receive it, say, every 5 minutes. So every 5 minutes, they would expect to receive a new feed of information or predictions made by the network and ranked according to top miner performances. And you can rank however you'd want. You'd be able to rank based off historical performance by that miner. You'd be able to rank based off of their return from their predictions. You could do it based off a bunch of different metrics. And so, or you could do a consensus model, which is the way that I expect most of them to function. They'll take, say, give me the top 20 miners, let me know what they're predicting. And then you say, of those 20, 25 miners, what is their consensus? Are they in consensus on saying the market will drop 3%? And so by doing something like that, you can have a higher certainty. And based off of historical performance, those miners have a higher certainty as to where the market will head. So for us, though, the way that we work is validators will ping all the miners at certain intervals. They store it on their machine and in their systems. And then when requests come in, they're just retrieving the information they've already stored. So it's not like they're going to ping the network every 5 minutes. I mean, every time a request comes through, they've already stored it from those 5 minute intervals, for example. So they just have to reference what's already been stored.
Gotcha.
So the cadence, yeah.
This is maybe just summarize. So like, let's say we have a collection of hedge funds. They have collectively 100 different requests. They kind of send those to the validators. The validators have those requests that they send down to the miners, and those requests aren't changing necessarily all the time. They might be, you know, relatively constant, like maybe we're adding some requests here and there. But those 100 requests are basically pinging the miners, and the miners are giving responses every 5 minutes to the validators, which then gets served up to the request layer. Is that roughly?
Yeah. Yeah, so the validators will just ping every 5 minutes across all the trade pairs. They'll just say, give me your predictions across the entire market or all these markets. So the miners can prepare ahead of time to say, oh yeah, here's Bitcoin, Ethereum, Euro, US dollar, the SPX, NDX. You can prepare all of that ahead of time and then just serve it back to the validator based off of their request every like 5 minutes. And then the validator is storing that information. So whenever a ping comes in from the request layer via an app, which would be a hedge fund or a quant firm, they're just retrieving that information that the validator already requested from the miner. So it's already like cached in their systems for yeah. Retrieval.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. Very cool. And so, you know, to take a step back to your marketing efforts and getting a lot of really good talent onto Subnet 8, let's just get into the numbers. How much are these miners competing for? Why should traders come to Subnet 8 and compete rather than just going out on their own and trading?
Yeah, so that is a massive incentive. So we currently, SN8 is currently positioned as the second largest subnet. We have an estimated $30 million in miner payouts annualized. We've already paid out, I think, over $6 million, even since we've created the subnet. So Matt, we are the largest incentivized mining pool for the prediction of financial markets in the world. It's not even close. So it's massive.
And that's only for Bitcoin predictions in the future. Very, very niche. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, there's massive incentive for people to come join. There's so much money to be made. And it's going to become incredibly competitive this quarter. Our goal is to drive all the talent and get essentially get SN8 to the point where, you know, it's as good as a quant firm's performance by the end of this quarter. That's our target. So that come Q2, selling is easy. I mean, everyone's going to want it. We're going to want it ourselves. I mean, you know, we have a laundry list of people that are just interested to just get that output. But we understand that, you know, we got to drive this engine first. The engine's got to get where we want. And then, I mean, it's endless selling, really. Demand will be very high.
Yep, and why did you guys decide to use BitTensor versus something like, you know, building it all in-house, like something like Numerair, right? Like they're doing something kind of similar, right? Maybe you can talk a little bit about like the advantages to BitTensor, how you guys are unique from something like Numerair.
Yeah, Numerai is and it was kind of the creator of this kind of idea in general, right? They were like the first one to try and step into this space. We are quite different in how we function from them, though, in many ways. I would say, though, the thing that we have in that's similar is the fact that we're in financial markets. Pretty much from there, it just completely deviates. So so our for them, you know, I think everything is a lot higher time frame. They're looking at larger you know, outlooks. The payout is longer. The incentive is not as high. They're concentrated on stocks. There's a lot of differences. For us, we're looking we under like for us, we understand and our expertise is in intraday trading. Intraday is where you're going to make a lot of return. You can make ma almost maximize return through intraday if you do it correctly and do it well. And that's again our expertise. And you know, we're going to go cross market. You know, that's something that we're already planning on doing is crypto, forex, stocks, metals. We want to have it all and have do it all intraday, which is typically how, you know, that again, that's where the most opportunity is. And then BitTensor really enabled us so that we didn't have to build any of that infrastructure. You know, they housed it all for us so we could just concentrate on, you know, the components of the miners, the validators, the output. And then just let the validators and the, you know, the community know what our value proposition is and what we're looking to accomplish so they can support us, which they have done so well. I mean, that's how we became the largest incentivized mining pool for the prediction of financial markets. So without BitTensor, we wouldn't have that. We'd have to go build it. And we'd just be replicating a ton of the core infrastructure that BitTensor enables us with, which would be redundant. So, very thankful for BitTensor existing.
Gotcha. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, no, I think that's I was just thinking, you know, how BitTensor facilitated the subnet creation for you guys. I think you guys are doing the same thing for miners, right? So just arming ML and data science teams around the world that maybe have a great model or think they do, and but don't either have the ability or the interest in building a company and, you know, sort of driving that product home. They could just plug into SN8. You know, with your help, help them process data, help them just get set up with sort of open source models if they need them. But yeah, I mean, it sounds like there's a nice waterfall of support, I think, across.
Yeah, I'll just hit on the fact that, you know, I really see SN8 as a template for success for other subnets. You know, their validation process may be different than ours. Ours is a little easier, I feel. But outside of that, the process of supporting miners, the process of pushing open source, the process of increasing competition on the subnet, the process of supporting validators to make sure they're successful via automated scripts, via all these infrastructure pieces, and the process of creating a request layer for revenue streams or user metrics or whatever the way you want to be able to show growth is what we're trying to do. We want to create it as a template so we can support other subnets too. You know, while it is a marketplace of competition, we'll see BitTensor grow the most if we do work together. So it's this combination of, hey, we're all competing, but hey, at the same time, like we should be supporting each other by driving open source infrastructure, like visibility projects. Like the request layer is it should be open source, it should be decentralized. So these things are things that we're looking to drive forward to at Tauji is is be a leader in the space to help enable other subnets. So yeah, it's something that we're actively doing.
Yeah, I think that's a great segue to Dynamic Tau and really how that is going to be influencing emissions to each subnet. I would love, you know, your take on it. You know, it's still pretty fresh, but just how that, you know, first, what is Dynamic Tau and how does it work? And then kind of what are the implications for the BitTensor ecosystem?
I will start off by saying I'm not a Dynamic Tau expert.
Sure, yeah,
and it's the proposal, super early. It's early. The proposals are still being worked on.
Yeah.
And revised, and nothing is set in stone. But based off my understanding, you know, every subnet will have its own token instead of the emissions being driven by validators, which is the process right now. Validators determine which subnets are the most important or have the most significance, and they set weights or emissions of the network to those subnets. The future is not doing that. It's the subnets having their own kind of their emissions being set by essentially who are the delegators. It's the holders of Tau. They purchase the subnet token, which has its own separate value, which is a percentage of Tau's total value. And the price can fluctuate, right? It can go up and down, but it is essentially moving the network emissions from being controlled by validators to the hands of the delegators, which I think is a great move. I really do like the decision. The fact that it's all a market and a marketplace, I think, is going to be really great. You know, I think that it's going to greatly benefit legitimacy, which is what we love to see. You know, what actually is the value of a subnet? You know, we always go back to value prop. Again, this is kind of what we're obsessed with at Taoshi. It's like, you know, where we want to see BitTensor be revenue driven or metric driven, because and really the communication by subnet owners, this comes back to being a business and a startup. You know, for us at Taoshi, we're having a public company presentation on the 7th. The reason we're doing that is because we understand the significance of the community and the significance of their input and their understanding of what we're building and doing and the fact we're constantly delivering. You know, what's our path to success? We want to share that with our community so they know. And I think that that is another kind of template piece that we're talking about with SNA as a template. We want to show other subnet owners the way so that when subnet tokens roll out with Dynamic Tau, they can see that, hey, we really need to grasp the attention of the community, of the delegators. That's how we're going to grow and be important. And Taoshi, we, by being so concentrated on revenue, it's going to push the other subnets and subnet tokens also concentrate in that direction. They're either going to have to push their value in two ways, in my opinion. One, revenue streams. Two, user metrics. You got to show your growth. And what's your path to growth? What is your trajectory that you're trying to go down? And so, yeah, that's what we're trying to push the network towards. And I think we're going to get it to be the most valuable by doing that, by pushing competition. So I think subnet tokens are fantastic because I think they just further push those initiatives.
Yeah. I think that subnet 8 and some of the other highly used subnets like Cortex will end up being a much larger share of total emissions, right? Going back to what we talked to before, which is subnets are really hard to create. And so it doesn't necessarily make sense that every subnet that launches should just get, you know, a large emission, right? And so I think what we'll probably see, correct me if I'm wrong, is a large share of emissions being concentrated to very few really core subnets, which makes sense because those are going to be the few that in the short term are really delivering value. And some of these other subnets, which may just be earlier in their process, may not be getting, you know, quite as much attention, and as a result, not as much revenue. It's just, you know, very meritocratic, I think, the whole Dynamic Tau proposal.
Yeah, so when we look at, I'll just hit on like how SNA will function really quick here. So like for us with subnet tokens, our thought is, you know, The request layer will drive revenue to validators. They're directly going to receive revenue. And we're creating apps, actually, where the 100% of the proceeds are going to go back to validators. So we're actually going to take no revenue from them for ourselves. It's a strategic decision to enable more success for the subnets. But it's essentially the cost basis of receiving those transactions. That's what we're deeming it as for ourselves. But that revenue from the validators will likely get some kind of distribution method to delegators. So the delegators get success from the subnet as well. And so if you're making more TAO by or subnet tokens by owning this token versus another one, then you're going to drive to the one that gives you more returns, right? Like that's just naturally what everyone's looking for is returns. We're all investors, right? Or, you know, everyone likes to see it succeed or subnet succeed, but at the end of the day, bottom line is probably the biggest incentive. So the subnets that can drive revenue and get delegators more revenue are likely going to be the ones that are most successful. And so, yeah, I think Corcel and SN8 are probably two of the larger ones. I don't want to put any spoilers, but we do have more subnets that are actually coming out that are completely revenue based, and we actually expect them to have revenue on day one. So, and they're launching it this quarter. So like it's the pressure is on. Like we're not looking to have the network sit around and talk about hype, right? And narrative. We want to push the network with revenue. And in other SMS cases, they'll like not all of them are gonna have revenue, right? Like that's just some of them are just that's not the way that they're built. They're they're B2C. So it's gonna be user metrics. Like what are our growth? What's our growth plan? You know, and I just wanna put pressure. And it's a good thing. I think that's going to, iron sharpens iron, I believe is the saying. Yeah. So yeah, we want to sharpen everybody up. Like, hey, you gotta contribute. And I think that's, again, the beauty of the marketplace. I think, I don't want to speak for Corcel, but I do think they see it similarly. You know, we want to push everyone to deliver more value. And hopefully that by the end of it, we'll attract more talent. You know, we have hard revenue coming into the network. We can differentiate that way as a network. We can talk about how TAO is driven by revenue, and you can see the increasing revenue over time on a dashboard because it's supported by open source decentralized nodes, request nodes. And so you can actually see all the wallets receiving, revenue, and then you can tie it into a dashboard, like how much revenue is each subnet providing or how much traffic is each subnet providing, right, to the network. These are cool metrics that we're going to be able to actually show without, someone just pumping the numbers, like it's, concrete objective. That's what we're aiming for.
Yeah, I think the point that you made on being kind of trying to gather attention to a specific subnet is really important because it will incentivize the subnets to show these metrics, which I think right now is just a little lacking. I mean, it's super early, right?
It's early.
Four months into subnets or whatever yeah. It is, 5 months. But it'll be really cool to see, from a specific subnet level, what's going on, what's the user activity, what's the revenue generation. And again, like this kind of takes me back to this this idea of BitTensor being this broad protocol where you have these applications being built out, these applications being subnets, in one instance, and then you also have front ends, which will be another type of application. And so that kind of leads me to my next question, which is, what do you envision for like the growth of BitTensor? Do you see it as like an Ethereum DeFi, sort of ecosystem, or will it be contained? Like it, there are so many different ways I feel like the growth of BitTensor could go.
Yeah, so if you just really high level abstract out what BitTensor is, it's an incentive protocol. That's really what it is. And if you think about an incentive protocol, like if you take an incentive protocol and you apply it to crypto, pretty much you can drive value in every aspect. So you can start building, let's say, a DEX, and you can make I'm just throwing this out there. We actually have plans to make this, but so I'm releasing a little bit of what we're planning on doing. But you can build a DEX, and you can say, well, we can incentivize our users, we can incentivize our market makers, and we can build a DEX. And it could be the best DEX to exist because everyone's incentivized to participate. Like that's pretty crazy. So it's like it's things that don't exist. When we're thinking about BitTensor, we're looking at a sliver really of what it is with ML and AI. And I think that's great. It's a huge sliver, right? I mean, it's massive, but it is a sliver. I mean, I think if you think about smart contracts and incentivizing usage of smart contracts, that's a huge potential. Like, there's so many things that can be built when you add smart contracts and crypto and blockchain technology in to what exists with this incentive mechanism. So many things don't exist yet as to what BitTensor will be. We are really looking at a piece and being like, oh yeah, we're incentivizing intelligence. Yes, we're incentivizing intelligence, but we're not even really thinking about all the other incentives that we could create that will come. You know, you think about all the crazy intelligent people that are in this ecosystem of blockchain tech. And when they see, they don't know about BitTensor. The community that really knows about BitTensor, we're all just buying it because we're like, oh yeah, this is like the future if you like understand it. And the minute that all those other participants from the ecosystem, the blockchain community join, they're going to be like, wow, I can use this with Uniswap. I can do this with, you know, I can incentivize in this way and that way, participation. And so I think that's going to be a huge mechanism for growth. So in my opinion, I think TAO is really abstracted away as an incentive protocol. And I think that's going to be the biggest usage of blockchain technology in the world. Like, I don't actually think that, I think Bitcoin is second. It's just my opinion. But if you think about incentivizing and you think about the way that we're pushing competition already, you can imagine where it's going to be in like 3 years. Like, we're just going to continue to do this where we're going to say, let's push competition here, let's push competition there, let's go into these domains, and let's just continue to like blow this up, right? So to me, it's bringing crypto and blockchain to the real world with incentivization. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, it's really, BitTensor is so generalizable, and it comes down to those two things, right? Can you benchmark? And can you properly incentivize all those stakeholders within a given subnet? And it sounds pretty trivial when you just boil it down to kind of like those two things, but it's really not, because benchmarking is, you know, kind of difficult in some instances. And incentivizing everybody to make everybody happy can be difficult as well.
I agree. I think that the validation process is the key component. But the beauty is with blockchain tech, things are on chain, so you can verify very easily. So again, I think about this, you know, our thought is jumping ahead to using, building a lot of these things. And so we're thinking we're already planning for 2025. So yeah, we're building a lot of these, we're working to incorporate a lot of these things I just talked about, because we're, you know, we're a bit of the, I don't want to say we're the leader, but we are, you know, someone that's trying to pave a path here for what we vision, our vision is of BitTensor, I think I could say. And so we want to build that and show it off and get more builders to come. Because again, we are also TAO holders. We want to see it succeed. It's that, you know, cooperation with competition. What do we call it? Coopetition. You know, like, it's a bit of both, right? So we want to see the network succeed really badly as well.
Yeah. So, you know, I just want to be conscious of time here. As we kind of look to wrap up, is there anything else that you'd like to touch on that we haven't yet?
I don't think so. I would say the number one thing I will probably continue pushing is trying to get subnet owners to think of themselves as more of a business. I think that's just, you have to do that. The validation process is core, but second, you know, the other important part is like how you can deliver value. So the value prop needs to be really thought out, and hopefully, you know, we get a lot more competition. That's really what I hope.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in general, getting into the weeds of how SN8 works and how all the participants support the network has been really helpful, even for me to just understand how TAO works in general, or BitTensor works in general, right? So thanks so much for taking the time, Arash. This is awesome. How can people reach out to you, get involved, start, you know, submitting their miners, making SN8 the best prediction market in the world?
Yeah, you can just go to taoshi.io. There's get started. There's documentation directly to our GitHub, direct link to our Discord. We have a community hub. So jump in there and just get started and ask questions in our community hub, and you have direct access to my entire team. So
awesome. Thank you for taking the time, Arash.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
See ya.
This content is provided for informational and educational purposes only and should not be relied upon as financial, legal, or tax advice. Prior to making any investment decision, you should consult with professional financial, legal, and tax advisors to determine the appropriateness of the risks associated with such an investment. No assurance can be given that the objectives of a particular investment will be achieved or that an investor will receive a return of all or part of his or her investment. All investments involve the risk of loss, including the loss of principal. In no event shall Plaintext Capital Management LLC, Plaintext, or any of its affiliates be responsible or liable for the correctness of any material discussed herein or for any damage or lost opportunities resulting from the reliance upon such material. References in this podcast to any specific securities or digital assets are for illustrative purposes only and do not constitute an investment recommendation or offer to provide investment advisory services. Furthermore, this content is not directed at nor intended for use by any investors or prospective investors. Plaintext and/or its clients may maintain positions discussed on this podcast. Certain information discussed or presented in this podcast may have been obtained from third-party sources. While taken from sources believed to be reliable, Plaintext has not independently verified such information and makes no representations about the enduring accuracy of the information or its appropriateness for a given situation. Any projections, estimates, forecasts, targets, prospects, and/or opinions expressed during this podcast are subject to change without notice and may differ or be contrary to opinions expressed by others.